Welcome back to InfoWars Sunday Night Live. I'm your host, Royce White, here in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hope you've been in the first hour of my guest hosting here. Hey, you know, I just tell it like it is, guys, and that's exactly what I plan to do from the well of the United States Senate. It's all we can do is tell the truth at this point. Last hour, I talked about this Somalian, fraud. Look, there are a lot of good Somalians here in Minnesota. Let's just call a spade a spade, okay? There are a few. We know what that number of few is. Could be a big number. And if it's a big number, then it's a mass deportation. If there are 30,000 Somalian immigrants that defrauded the immigration process, you're going back. Sorry. I don't know what they're waiting on. You know what bothers me the most? What are they waiting on when it comes to Ilhan Omar? What are they waiting on? She defrauded the immigration process. What is this Department of Justice waiting on? Did we get the picture up? Did bring the picture up from my ex, if you can, of the plaque with Tom Emmer and the Somalian caucus. Can we bring that up on the side by side, please? There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen of the American Conservative Movement and Republican Party, your House Majority Whip, most powerful Republican in Minnesota, titular head of the Minnesota Republican establishment, Chairman Emeritus of the Somali Caucus. Oh, he and Keith Ellison, they had a great PR moment, a great photo op for creating the Somali Caucus. Why is there a Somali Caucus in the first place? If Somalians who came to this country are here legally and they believe in America and they want to be Americans, they want to pursue the American dream, they believe in America's foundational values, why do they need a caucus? And hey, I don't mind that they have a caucus. What I do mind is that people like Tom Emmer play both sides of the fence. They go on the Fox News of the world and say, we have a problem with Islam. But they come back home to Minnesota and they're the chair emeritus of the Somali caucus. And they just do it right up in your face. They're like, you Americans are stupid. We could tell you anything. We could tell you anything. You'll believe anything. That's probably the biggest, the greatest discovery in my time involved with politics over the last 4 or 5 years is how stupid they think you are and how willing many people are to accept the propaganda, to drink the Kool-Aid. See, that's why I say on my show, convenience will be the death of freedom. Convenience will be the death of freedom. It's not just the convenience of security, it's the convenience of uncomfortability. You don't want to be uncomfortable when a person like me tells you that for some strange reason, our House Majority Whip is the chairman emeritus of the Somali caucus, and what everybody claims is one of the greatest problems and examples of the fall of Western society and all of our great United States of America. But for some reason, we still pretend like Tom Emmer is a great MAGA Republican, don't we? We just can't break it. Cowardice. I'll say it. Tom Emmer, as a matter of fact, I think I confronted Tom Emmer at a Congressional District 6 convention and asked him why he didn't endorse me after I had won the nomination in a primary as the Republican candidate against one of the most progressive Democrats in all of America, Amy Klobuchar. Why didn't our House Majority Whip endorse me in that race? What he's really saying is we'd rather have Amy Klobuchar than a Royce White. And that about says it all, doesn't it? That starts to connect the dots, doesn't it? At least it should. I mean, hey, if it doesn't for you, then you probably just don't want to see it. But then again, you're probably not listening to Alex Jones on a Sunday night. I'm Royce White. I'm here in the belly of the beast. Stay tuned. We'll be right back in a moment after this brief break.
You have until this Sunday, December 14th, 2025 to get 40% off store-wide at theolliveshowstore.com. And that means all of the incredible supplements that will enrich and empower your life. They really work. We have 5-star reviews, and they fund our operation, take on the globalists. So please do your Christmas shopping at theolliveshowstore.com. It is a 360 win for everybody. Now, ultramethylene blue liquid, 40% off. Bovine colostrum, the very best, running out, still 40% off. Ultramethylene blue caps, 40% off. Back in stock. Ultramethylene red, that's right, it's back in stock, but it has a very low supply. Ultimate sea moss, gummies and capsules, all back in stock, 40% off at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, please do your Christmas shopping at thealexjonesstore.com. Get great products that enrich your life and funds the tip of the spear in the fight against the globalists.
Welcome back to InfoWars Sunday Night Live. I'm your host, Royce White, here in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're just talking about the Rhino establishment. Oh, we know what the globalists are up to. We know how the Somalians came to Minnesota in the first place. We were sticking our nose in a war, in a conflict we had no business in to begin with. Ilhan Omar's father was a nationalist, socialist, warlord, general there in the Horn of Africa, who was responsible for the death of some hundreds of thousands of Somalis and Somalilanders there in the Horn of Africa. That's the part they leave out of Ilhan Omar's bio about her background, about her family's background. Can you imagine if Royce White's, if my father was a nationalist, socialist, warlord, general who was responsible for the genocide of hundreds of thousands of any people anywhere in the world? Can you imagine what the hit pieces would say from the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Guardian? They say this man comes from a family of genocidal maniacs. They're killers. But oh, Ilhan Omar, she fits the DEI prototype. She's perfect. She's a woman. She's Muslim. She's an immigrant, a refugee. She married a white Jewish man despite her hatred of white men and white supremacy. She is the quintessential Democrat. So we'll just leave the part about her genocidal father out of her profile. No need to bring it up. Ask those Somalilanders about General Omar. That was his name. Not even sure. You know, they changed their names and things. But the problem isn't the problem isn't the Somalians. The problem is we accepted a foreign policy that would have us in a war we shouldn't be in the first place. And then we accepted the result, the outcome of hundreds of thousands of Somalians being dropped right here in the state of Minnesota, in our neighborhoods, in our homes. That's what we accepted. That's the problem. And I was at this town hall this last week here, and a man who I know, who I took a picture with in St. Cloud at the Trump rally. As if you remember the Trump rally here in Minnesota, it was big time, sold out, line around the block, you know, a mile long line of people who were just in the overflow crowd, because we have a big, despite what they want you to believe, that Michelle Tafoya's, a lot of people here in the state of Minnesota love President Trump. And they love the MAGA movement, and they love what it's done. They don't regard it as chaos or anything of the sort. We regard it as a return to normal. Just right. We're not the far right. We're not the extreme right. We're just right. President Trump is a return to some resemblance of normalcy, to where we had gone. So there was this great President Trump rally in St. Cloud, and several dozens of Somalians came out in support of President Trump, people from the Somalian community, leaders from the Somalian community, who are conservatives, who are Republicans, who believe in this country, who believe in having a country called America and our foundational values and a citizenship, a citizenry that will not submit to Sharia law. There are Somalians and Muslims in this country who do believe in America. And they are in a constant battle, a constant conflict, ideologically, spiritually, intellectually, to square some of the more extreme elements of their faith practice and their citizenship. But anyway, at this rally, I took a picture with a young man, an individual who was supportive of President Trump and this, you know, stomp for President Trump and tried to rally support in the Somali community for President Trump. And he shows up at this town hall and he's very upset with me for saying that we should mass deport Somalians. That's, first of all, I didn't say we're going to mass deport all Somalians. I said we're going to mass deport the illegal Somalians. And we are. By God, we will. Or we better. But what I ended up telling him during that town hall is, and I think he got the message clear, because by the end, we shook hands and we hugged, and I think that we have an understanding. The answers to Somalia are not in Minneapolis. The answers to Somalia are in Somalia. The answers to Somalia are not in Minneapolis. The answers to Somalia are in Somalia. The reason why Somalia is a failed state, the reason why Somalia barely has any resemblance of a stable government, is not because of America. I should say it's not because of American citizens. It's not because of your average American citizen. It's because we allowed globalist political elites, financial elites, international elites, to stick their nose in a conflict we had no business in, and they like Somalia poor. See, when I mentioned Muammar Gaddafi in this town hall, the Republicans lost the color in their face, but the Somalian man who came with criticism and was upset about my comments changed his energy. So I had to remind him that Muammar Gaddafi stood up before the Arab Union, before the entire United Nations, but as the chair of the Arab Union, and said Somalia's problems, the piracy of Somalia, is the reason why there's piracy is because all of these other nations have come in and they've exploited Somalia's natural resources. And that's true. I think there's something like $4 trillion of oil reserves in Somalia. Untapped oil reserves in Somalia, not to mention the gold, not to mention the fish and all the other things off the coast and the oceans of Somalia. And the people of Somalia, here's the double-edged knife. Yes, our security state and our globalist politicians and our foreign policy did lead to the exploitation of Somalia, but it wouldn't have been possible without those Somalian sellouts. It's the same as the black community. Yes, you look across America and the black community is in peril. It's in ruin, but it couldn't have happened without the quid pro quo from the professional black population that takes a degree and they move to the suburbs and they get to high society. And they go to the wine, you know, mixers and all the little cool parties, and they're in the bourgeois class, and they get to act like they're oh so cool. And they end up joining a government corporate hybrid that loves black communities in chaos, in violence, in self-destruction. And they call it DEI. You get enough black people that make it out of the circumstance of the hood where there's chaos and violence and self-destruction. And they get to the corporate world, and in some strange twist of events, they end up at the head of, YouTube Music or BET or Jive and Interscope, whatever the case may be. And all of a sudden, you find the same black bourgeoisie sellouts justifying why it's appropriate for our cultural icons as black women to get popular and successful the more provocative they are and the more they take their clothes off. And in some very perverse ways, the more they depict images and symbols of Satan. It's like I still see women in the black community posting pictures and videos of Beyonce, even though they say they're Christians, as though they didn't see all of the satanic symbolism from Beyonce over the last decade. Are you getting my picture? Are you picking up what I'm putting down? Our country is plagued by a crisis of fake. We don't like the truth. We don't like to tell the truth. We don't like inconvenience. We don't like how uncomfortable it gets in the room when we say, hey, black women, I don't care what the Kardashians are doing, but it's probably not a good idea to connect your personal identity and vitality as a woman or a citizen or a political entity, because all citizens are in some regards, with your sexual liberation. Those probably aren't two things you want to conflate. If the only measure of me being more liberated, me having more freedom, me having more value in my citizenship or as a human being, or certainly as a Christian, is that I'm getting popular by my provocative behavior and taking more of my clothes off and shaking my backside, That's no real identity to have. That's no identity to be proud of. That's why, and I say that a lot of black people are starting to understand that. That's why a lot of black people rejected when Kamala Harris brought Meg the Stallion. I'm a savage, ratchet, bougie. I don't know what the rest of the lyrics are, but you all know the song. You don't know the song. Meg the Stallion. You know, I'm a savage, ratchet, bougie. None of those things are good. It's not good to, you know, then when Fox News, and this is the controlled opposition, then Fox News says, this is savage behavior. And then black people go, oh, that's racist. You called yourself a savage. Let's be real. You called yourself a savage, Meg Thee Stallion, and then Kamala Harris brought you up on stage to launch her presidential campaign. This is what we should want young black girls to look up to. Not my young black girls. If their mamas are in charge, if their mothers are in charge, maybe that'll be their modus operandi. And like I said the last time I was on the show, oppressed by our children, ruled by our women, the American man has been neutered. American fathers have been neutered in the home. Let's not talk about whether American fathers or black fathers are in the home or out of the home. American fathers are neutered in the home. American fathers, American men are neutered in their marriages, systematically propped up by the marriage courts and the family courts, because most men are reluctant to assert their male authority, their rightful male authority, even if you say just on an equal basis in a marriage between in a 50-50 sort of split, which isn't a Christian idea, but and it's not a biological idea of the animal kingdom either. But let's just say in American culture, a 50-50 partnership. There's no 50-50. There's nothing 50-50 about modern American marriages where 80% of the divorces are initiated by women, where 70% of women say that they're unhappy in their current marriages. There's nothing 50-50 about this marriage dynamic in this country at all. And there's certainly nothing 50-50 about the split, the divorces. In the divorces, over 60 to 70% of the time, the children go with the woman. The children are given to the women primarily in terms of custody or living arrangements, where fathers are usually accused of some type of wrongdoing or abusive behavior towards the children as a ploy to gain favor in a female or woman leaning court so that they can get custody, so they can claim that I need more child support because the kid lives with me more time than the father. Only in these strange marriages like Britney Spears and Kevin Federline, where he was a dancer and then ended up being a house dad in the marriage, big pimp in Kevin Federline. And then Britney loses her mind, goes crazy, they get divorced and Britney Spears ends up paying Kevin Federline money. That only happens. Oh, you know what's funny? That only happens when women actually reach the success that we try and put in front of our young women. Hey, young women out there, when you reach the Beyonce level success and you have a man, a regular guy who's not rich and famous, you end up paying him alimony when you get divorced. Isn't it funny how that whole thing works? And some people might be listening and going, what does this have to do with politics? Everything. That's the point. It's a crisis of culture. Everybody's getting their phone. You know, it's like everybody's doing a selfie. It's like, first of all, you're not that cool. You're not that good looking. Number one, you're not that good looking. Okay, let's just be clear about that. And I don't say that as an insult. I say that to be completely, 100% honest with you, because you look weird. The amount of I saw this the other day. There was a meme that said that this generation of Americans has most documented no achievements of any other time in history. We're just documenting our lack of achievement. We're just cool for being cool. The achievement is the documentation itself. It's like, it's what I mean about the pageantry. Even then it becomes, it bleeds over into our politics. It's like, who can tell the best story? That's who's the best candidate. Is he a strong candidate? What's his website look like? What's the color theme of his pamphlets? He's got some great pamphlets. He's got great handouts. Look at his literature. He's got great literature. It's eye-popping literature. Look, it's got purple in it. Because, purple's such a neutral color. We want to appeal to the independents and the moderates. I love that strong purple color in Minnesota. Ooh, the Vikings. And I don't mind the purple. I'm not saying the purple's bad. I get it. But what I'm saying is American politics is about the pageantry, because American culture is about the pageantry. And even Christianity is about the pageantry. Let's get down to it. The problem with American Christianity, the problem why you're afraid of the Muslims, is because the Muslims pray way different than we do. When the Muslims pray, all Christians get uncomfortable because you realize there's an intensity and discipline and a sort of a military organization to the way that Muslims pray. That's why you're afraid of Muslims when they pray in mass, like in New York City. That's why Christians don't go out to counter pray when they see the Muslims praying. Because there's a seriousness to the way that Muslims pray. The way that we pray in the Christian community, and mostly in the Protestant and in evangelical Christian community, is we come and we have some great alternative pop band, with the guitars and the bass and the beautiful inspirational music. And we hold our hands up, and this is the epitome of American Christianity. This is it. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Oh, God. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. Well, you see the results. Well, the problem in our Christian community is there aren't enough Christian leaders willing to stand up and say, and I'm seeing a few of them now. Mind you, I do want to be clear. I am seeing a more militant Christian movement starting to emerge in some of these places of worship where they're like, there's a younger black man. He's bald head, dark skin, bald head, has a beard, and he's got these great inspirational clips on social media. I keep coming by. Maybe it's because my algorithm is taking a liking to him because he's tough. He goes, if Christians aren't careful, you're going to wake up and the Bible's going to be illegal. The Bible's going to be illegal. If we keep coming to church to sing a stupid song and then go back and watch football and act like everything's okay, you're going to wake up and the Bible's going to be illegal. So there is a rise of some Christian militancy, but we need to put it in over drive if we're going to save this country. That's the cold, hard truth. The reason you're afraid when Muslims pray is because we even our prayer culture is very pageant-like. That's the best I can tell you. That really is the best I can tell you. It's like, we're soft. I'm not a perfect Christian. I'm not gonna Bible thump you. I've talked about Christianity a lot over these 2 hours, but I'm not here to say if you're not perfect, if you're a sinner, then you have no right to talk about anything in this country. No. Oh, no. No. That is not a Christian idea. Christians know that we're flawed. We know that we make mistakes. We know that sin is inevitable. It's been inevitable since the days of the garden. Man is fallen. How we deal with those mistakes, how we deal with those flaws is what makes us who we are. It's often the way by which we find our salvation. So you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be perfect to be a Christian or to stand up as one. Don't let them gaslight you into believing you have to be a perfect Christian to stand up as a Christian. It's ridiculous. And I know that some of you allow them to gaslight you into saying that, and you accept that narrative because you're trying to find a way out of the tough thing that needs to be done as well. You want a way out. You want a scapegoat. You want an off-ramp to the duty of Christians in this time where our country's been taken by Satanists and communists. You want a way out. Well, guess what? There are no ways out. Nobody's getting out alive. Nobody gets out alive. There is no workaround now. All the easy answers are behind us. All the easy questions are behind us. What do we do going forward? We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. I hate to have to do this, you know? I wish we could just come on and talk about things that are lighthearted and pleasant, but we can't because of the situation we're in. And I think this administration is burning daylight. I really do. Where are the arrests? Where are the indictments? Where are the arrests? Where are the indictments? How is Ilhan Omar still in the Congress? It's ridiculous. She frauded the process. She married her brother. They're not even hiding it. Nobody's even denying it. The people in the Somali community here in Minnesota, they're not denying it. They're not saying that's not true. They're more or less winking, nod, saying, yeah, I probably did. Where's the evidence? Why don't we have good enough records to even know if it's true or not right away upon demand? Think that's by accident? That Somalian refugees and their immigration status have bad record keeping? You think that's by accident? It's not by accident. There are no coincidences. There are no conspiracies, but there are no coincidences. It's not a coincidence. You're watching Sunday Night Live here on InfoWars. I'm your host, Royce White. Another 30 minutes until 8 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the broadcast this evening. It's a great honor to host. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I have not yet begun to fight. That's what the founder of the U.S. Navy, John Paul Jones, said back in 1779. And that's exactly where we are right now. You see this bad boy right here? That is a limited edition original InfoWars poster. We got about 1,000 that are unsigned, 500 that are signed, and that's it. And it is the final Hail Mary to keep InfoWars on the air. We've sold out of almost every product at InfoWarsStore.com. Via the bankruptcy, they won't let us order new products, but we were able to get this produced. This is an emergency fundraiser. It's myself, actual screenshot from the show, with a .357 Magnum aimed at the globalist, the truth gun, with John Paul Jones, the founder of the U.S. Navy, saying, I have not yet begun to fight. and 1997 to 2026, how long InfoWars survived. Hopefully we go past that with my signature. This is a limited edition poster, signed or unsigned. It goes to keep us on the air. They're going to have an auction. They're saying in January. They already had a federal auction that was rigged and fake, and the judge shut it down. This is a state auction. Good guys are going to try to buy InfoWars. We'll stay on air as InfoWars if they're successful. If they're not, we move on to the Alex Jones Network. But regardless, if we don't have funds coming in December and January, there won't be money for payroll, there won't be money for the bandwidth or the servers or the satellites. So it's absolutely essential you get this. And if we get shut down, you have a memento of the final resistance at InfoWars that is so historic to hang on your wall. And there's not just this poster. We've made 1,000 of these two other posters that I designed as well. One says, defend the West, 1997-2026, InfoWars, with the archetypal Knight of the West standing against the globalist. There's another, make no peace with evil, with another Knight of the Crusades standing with the cross in his hand against the globalist tyranny. Both are powerful posters as well. These are limited edition. You get signed copies if you really want to support us, or just get the regular posters as well if you want to support us. But all three of these posters are limited edition, right now exclusively available at InfoWarsStore.com. This is historic. We've come so far together. The deep state spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to shut us down. We still got a chance to win. But if we don't have the funds coming in December and January, we will shut down. So I want to thank you all for your past support. I want to encourage you now to go to InfoWarsStore.com, where everything else is sold out and there's no more funds to buy more stuff to keep us on the air. And just by attrition, they will win and shut us down by not having money for payroll if you don't decide to bail out this organization that has had incredible results against the tyrants and has stood for you and your family and all of us collectively. So take action now and get the iconic limited edition I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones, Alex Jones poster, and Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West posters, limited edition, and know historically you stood with the tip of the spear at the key part of this fight, and we never gave up and we never surrendered, and we stood and fought on our feet instead of groveling on our knees as slaves. Thank you so much. I've fired the bat signal. Thank you for all your past support, but now is the critical time to take action at InfoWarsStore.com for these three limited edition iconic posters. The ball's in your court. Take action now at InfoWarsStore.com. It's now up to you.
Welcome back to the Royce White Show. No, it's not the Royce White Show. This is Sunday Night Live on InfoWars here. I'm your host, Royce White, in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Talked about a lot of things over the course of 2 hours. I've enjoyed hosting today. I hope that you enjoyed it as well. We got to get down to brass tack. what do we do going forward? Tell the truth. It's not hard. It's not difficult. It's not rocket science. It's not rocket science. Not you know, theoretical physics, particle string theory, quantum physics. It's not even political science. It's just basic. Tell the truth. We have to tell the truth about what's going on in this country, culturally, politically, spiritually. And if we do that, we stand a fighting chance. The truth always has a chance. I'm not saying we'll be victorious. Jesus Christ spoke the truth. He was crucified for it. The early apostles, they were martyred. And the fundamental difference between Christianity and Islam is that Christianity was spread by the blood of the martyrs, and Islam was spread by the blood of its enemies. So I'm not saying you're guaranteed victory if you tell the truth, but I think the inception of this country, 1776, the inception of the United States of America, was an inflection point in the spiritual arc of human history where our founding fathers framed this country in a way where the blood of the martyrs, where picking up your cross and bearing it, where self-sacrifice and basic truth, telling the truth, especially about the most important issues of our time, does have a fighting chance of concretizing what they would call the will of the people. Vox populi, vox Dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God. Our founding fathers framed our government in a way that connects, that bridges a gap, at least intellectually, but also politically, governmentally, bridges a gap between righteousness, God, Christ, righteousness, and the overall will of the people by some measurable standard. So it's never been more important that we tell the truth. Never been more necessary. We're afraid of Islam because Christianity is too soft. We outnumber the Muslims in this country, 30-1. It's about 8 million Muslims in America at best. But they're organized. Not even as organized as some would say. I mean, I think the best measure of overall Muslim organization is when you look at the Arab states there in the Middle East and how quickly they bend the knee when the bullets start flying, even recently during the conflict there in the region. You know, the Muslims, as faithful as they may be to the Quran and Muhammad, face the same internal conflict as the rest of humanity. How does one live in modernity and still prioritize the contemplative, still prioritize the spiritual? Man, that is a conundrum that all of us face in society going forward, especially as the technology increases, especially as the industrialization of our global society increases. How does one live in modern society and still keep the spiritual a priority? Very difficult, not easy. The Muslims have to deal with it the same way that we do. And that's why when push comes to shove, people can say, oh, east versus west, cross versus crescent, like President Erdogan of Turkey after October 7th. So this is a fight between the east and west, the cross versus crescent. But really, Erdogan, is that what it is? Is this a holy war, sir? The heart of the Turk longs for Vienna. Ever heard that expression? It's an expression about the Turkish desire to be European. The heart of the Turk longs for Vienna, which is probably why the Uyghurs were thrown into Turkic Muslims, probably why the Uyghurs were thrown into concentration camps by China and in China by the CCP, and you didn't hear President Erdogan saying that it was a war between the Muslims and the Chinese elites. Did you ever hear him say that? No, you didn't. Did you ever hear President Erdogan make one public statement condemning the treatment of the some 2 million Uyghurs put in concentration camps in China? No, you didn't. Because they have sellouts in the Muslim world and the Arab states the same way they have sellouts right here in these United States. Selling out is the problem. We have a crisis of leadership and an epidemic of sellouts. That's the real pandemic. The pandemic of people selling out is far worse than COVID-19 by a long shot. It's not even close, not even remotely close. The real epidemic in this country is selling out. It's so bad, in fact, people aren't even getting an offer to sell out. They're preparing their resume on the off chance they get an offer to sell out. They don't even have an offer. They're living their lives as sellouts on the off chance somebody comes along and offers them a handsome payday for giving up their morals and their integrity. They're keeping their resume ready. I'll sell out. I'll sell out for the right price. Hey, I'll sell out for the right price. Just give me the right amount. I'll sell out. Go ahead, bend me over. I'll sell out. Sell out here. Going once, going twice. Anybody need a sell out? That's the epidemic of this great nation. People who are willing to sell out, too willing to sell out. Well, you're looking at a man before you now that will not sell out. In fact, the great tumult of my young 35-year-old life is all a byproduct of me not selling out. Child support arrears and the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why? Because I was court ordered to pay child support at an NBA salary that I never actually made, which I never actually made because I was willing to challenge the NBA at 21, not 41, not 31. At 21 years old, I was willing to go into an office with a bunch of international lawyers and businessmen that run the NBA, run the National Basketball Association, and say, do you all think I'm for sale? Because if you think I'm for sale, I'm offended. If you think I'm for sale, keep your money. Some of my friends, some of my colleagues, some of my counterparts, some of the people I grew up with, they took the money and they will continue to take the money. And I'm not shaming them for taking the money. I'm just different. I'm a little different. If there's something to be said, I'm going to say it. That's my calling. That's my personality temperament. Against all odds, it could be me in a room of 100 people, and there's an elephant sitting there, big, huge elephant. I'm going to be the one to point the elephant out. And if it means all 100 people descend against me with all their might, I will fight my way out of that room if necessary. And those are the kind of people that you need leading this country. Who's willing to stand in the fire with the scrutiny as the purveyors of the status quo attempt to maintain the status quo of corruption? Who will stand in that fire? Who will fight in that fire? It's not enough to even just stand in the fire. You know, somebody could stand in the fire and die a glorious death of a martyr, burnt at the stake like the great Joan of Arc. So it's possible to stand in the fire. Who can fight in the fire? President Trump is a guy who fights in the fire. Literally, he's in the fire and he's still fighting. In fact, he got shot, he stood up and he said, fight, fight, fight. I mean, still one of the most, if we can pull that up, I think we have such a short-term, memory crisis in America, in American culture, that we forget those glorious moments. If we can, let's just roll some B-roll of that moment where President Trump was shot and in a glorious response, he stands and instinctually says, fight, fight, fight. Let's just remember who this man actually is. You see, you know who a man really is in a life or death situation. You can tell who a man really is in a life or death situation, all flaws and all, imperfections and all. Do I have a bunch of criticisms of this administration? I have plenty of disagreements with President Trump on a wide variety of issues, but you can tell who a man really is when you put him in a life or death situation. How does he respond? Does he respond with courage or does he cower? This is one of the most courageous things that we witnessed in the history of our great nation. We all knew it was coming. We all knew the assassination attempt of President Trump was coming. And there may be more in the future. Don't count that out. I think now they kind of feel that they've institutionally slowed President Trump down, which I said that they would do after he won. That the real fight begins now, not to try and kill him. That the real fight is that they're going to try and use the institutions to railroad his second term. And I think they've done that. I think they think they've successfully done that. And it's going to be on President Trump in his courage and his righteousness and discernment to bring down the heavy sword of righteousness to overcome the institutional roadblocks that have been put before him in this administration. Some of them right there inside the administration. And I know that's uncomfortable. I'm sure. I'm sure there's so much backstabbing and bite back biting and double dealing and triple crossing right there in the White House that it would blow our minds. This is the stuff that they make daytime television shows like Scandal based on. We probably don't even, we can't even start to imagine the beginning of the double crosses and triple crosses that are going on there in Washington, D.C. And we pray that President Trump can find his way through that, can steer the ship through that. But never forget who a man is when he's in a life or death situation and how he responds, how he handles that. Does he handle it with courage or does he cower? We don't have any more room for cowards. There are too many cowards in the Republican Party. There are too many cowards in the conservative movement. There are too many cowards in our Christian community. There are too many cowards here in America. You're a citizen. Stand up. Stand up. Be a warrior. You are a warrior. You are a fighter. Glory is not on Instagram or X or Getter or True Social or Facebook. Glory for American citizens is being a citizen, being an active citizen, fighting for this nation. Organize your community. Organize your family as best as you can. I know there's a lot of family strife from politics. Organize your local area. Go to precinctstrategy.com. Find out how to become a precinct committeeman. Get involved in the party process so you don't get rhino Minnesota Republicans like Kendall Qualls or Michelle Tafoya. And they are. They're establishment Republicans. President Trump's a little too chaotic. I know a lot of Republicans who voted for him, but they want to get back to normal now. Do you want to get back to normal? What was the normal exactly? The normal of the Minnesota Republican Party, and this is probably one of the great dark marks on the Republican Party as a whole, nationally, is that we put up Mitt Romney instead of Ron Paul. I mean, we kind of just said the quiet part out loud in that nomination, didn't we, as Republicans? We like a guy with a great smile, a great head of hair, and a great elitist name before the guy who's telling the truth. There is no way on earth that Mitt Romney should have been the candidate to go against the most progressive person in American politics instead of Ron Paul. Ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. We still haven't recovered as a party, in fact. We haven't recovered from that. See, because the Mitt Romney, even though Mitt Romney's lost favor and the MAGA movement's become so strong that the Mitt Romneys of the world had to resign, had to drop out and say, you know what, my time, you know, my time has come. I can no longer. And then they throw in with Kamala Harris. I mean, think of it. Just think of it. It's indicative of what I've been saying all night. The problem isn't Kamala Harris. The problem is a former Republican presidential nominee on the Republican side threw in with the communists in this nation's darkest hour. Mitt Romney, 2012 Republican nominee, threw in with Kamala Harris and commie Tim Walz in this nation's darkest hour. That is the story of the Republican Party. President Trump changed that story. The MAGA movement and America First movement are trying to change that story. Here in Minnesota, Mike Lindell and I are trying to change that story, but we're going to need people's help. Well, you can't resign. You can't resign from a society. You can't resign from life. You can die in a blaze of glory, but you can't resign. You can die in a blaze of glory, but you cannot resign. You cannot retreat. You can reorganize. Okay. But there is no retreat. There is no backstep. Especially not in politics. We're not going to tone down the rhetoric. We're not going to tone down anything. There's no easy way to clean up a big mess. There's no easy way to clean up a huge mess. The open border that the illegitimate Biden regime left for President Trump and the rest of us as American citizens was a huge mess. And there's no easy way to clean up a huge mess. It's what I told the Somalians that came out to the town hall. I said, don't blame President Trump when ICE gets a little bit aggressive or you know, and even in my opinion, is mishandling of people out there while they're trying to sort out who's who. It's not President Trump's fault. And the answer is, well, we're just going to let everybody stay because there's no easy way to clean it up. There's no way to clean it up that doesn't look bad. We're tired of the PR and the propaganda and the pleasantry. We, the American people, if you want a place to blame, you place the blame on your leaders who were responsible for opening up a border, our border. And then if you want a place to blame, you place the blame on yourself for electing those people and allowing them to operate that way. It's their fault. And then it's our fault. It's not the person's fault who has to clean it up. I mean, it's like, you know, blaming ICE for the imperfect way that they have to go about getting rid of all these illegal immigrants is like showing up to the scene of a crime and somebody's shot somebody else. And now there's blood gushing profusely from the individual. And you blame the paramedic for getting blood all over their paramedic uniform. How are you going to blame them? It's ridiculous. But again, that's a crisis and failure of first principles and logic. And that's by design. That's not a coincidence that we fail to use our first principles and logic on something as easy as that. It's not ICE's fault that they have to get aggressive out there trying to deport people who aren't supposed to be here. And when they get it wrong and when they misidentify somebody or they take somebody or they're rough with somebody who actually ends up being a legal citizen, they should apologize and there should be restitution. That's fair. That's fair. It's fair for the government to say, you know what? We have a mandate to get out all these illegal immigrants. But when we make a mistake, when we get it wrong, we will apologize and we will pay restitution for our mistakes. That's okay. That's a good use of our money. Not sending another couple billion dollars to Ukraine. That's the point, fundamentally, at a spiritual level. You talk about brass tack. How do we go forward? That has to be the change in how we see this thing, how we view it, how we deal with this thing going forward. We can't afford to send another dime to another country because we have to get illegal immigrants out of this country. And when we get it wrong, and we will get it wrong, we are going to have to apologize and pay some form of restitution to these people who are actually citizens. But that means we can't afford to be the world's police. We can't afford to go on down the road to another person's house and home and do renovations when we have a big hole in our living room. There's a big giant hole sitting in our living room and there's water, you know, leaking and flooding the basement. And here we are going down to the neighbor around the corner and saying, hey, man, we want to work. We got time to just hobby around and renovate your living room. Can I use the word retarded? Is that politically incorrect? Because it's the only word I see fit. That is retarded. We have a huge gaping hole in our own living room, and we're around the corner at somebody else's house trying to renovate their home. We don't have time or money to be renovating anybody else's homes right now. Are you feeling me? Am I tripping? Am I crazy? 2 hours, am I crazy? Because there's a lot of Minnesotans, there's a lot of people in my own personal life who try to act like I'm crazy, who say, oh, Royce, you know, listen to that guy. He's a loon. I saw somebody, a Republican on X. Oh, that Royce White is a loon. What's loony about America First? Now, you know what's loony? You know what I find loony? I find it loony that we believe we are $38 trillion in debt when $172 trillion in unfunded liabilities. Your average American citizen can't put together $500 to $600 cash in a financial crisis, and yet we still find some way to send our money to anybody else. That's loony. But it's accepted as American foreign policy. We're not the world's police. We don't want to be the world's police. That's what the beating heart of the MAGA movement is about. The only way we make America great again is if America is the first priority. Our people, our citizens, our country, our roads, our hospitals, our schools, our children, our medicine, our food. Make America great again. Make Minnesota great again. Americans must come first. It's not racist. It's not xenophobic. It's not anti-Semitic. It's prudent. It's realistic. It's been an honor to be here again with you this evening, hosting Sunday Night Live on InfoWars. I'm your host, Royce White, here from the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Congratulations to the great Mike Lindell for entering the race for Minnesota governor. And you can find my Senate campaign website at royce.us. Buy a Jesus is King t-shirt. God bless America, and Godspeed to you. Thank you.
I tried methylene blue, and instantly I bought a 9-month supply after that. I bought the Optimal Human Super Greens. I bought a 4-month supply of that. I bought Power Plant Plus, Methyl Drive, and Nitric Boost. And when I started all of this, I was 260 pounds, and I'm now down to 200 pounds exactly. And my testosterone when I started was 350. I was a low-T, overweight, useless, straight Christian male. My testosterone 2 weeks ago tested at 1,004. So these products really work. And when you hear someone say, the methylene blue is energy, but it's not like coffee, I was yelling at my radio, my TV or my phone going, what do you mean by that? What does that mean? Is it like a drug? Like, is it crack? Like, what are you talking? Listen, folks, whoever's on the fence about trying methylene blue, if you're 30 years or older, it's like waking up in your 20s. Like, I'm getting the chills just talking about it. I bought a 9-month supply of methylene blue because of how well it works. I can't express the gratitude I have for you guys over there and producing these kind of products. And shout out to the late Art Bell for turning me on to Alex Jones in 1995. So thank you very much. These products really, really work.
Well, we appreciate you calling in about the products and much, much more, of course. We are thankful for that. So thank you, Doug, for staying on hold. I know it's been a while, so we appreciate you for that. So I want to remind you all again, as you heard, to head on over to thealexjonesstore.com because everyone's bragging about the items we have there right now, and they're 40% off. You got to head on over right now, this very second, thealexjonesstore.com. We're selling out of a lot of your incredible items. They're still fully in stock, but they're going to sell out soon if you don't get it now.